So it's interesting when we took on the summer service this year, and lots of people are always asking, what in the world is Susie? Can you do something about Susie and what that's like? So we decided to do something on intentional community, and I had a really funny introduction. Mary sanitized it for you. It was great. You know, when it says the blurbs for the summer services, mine was, Dave has been annoying Lynn for 10 years now. For the last 8, he's been doing it at UUFBR. It was really cute, but she made it all nice and politically correct. So we thought we'd talk today about what it means to be a part of this community. And then we talk a little bit about the community at SUSE and why that becomes so special to those of us who go. So I looked up, obviously, the definition for community, and they vary a great deal. But it is a group of people with common interests living in a particular area, an interacting population of various kinds of individuals in a common location, a group of people with common characteristics or interests living together within a larger society, a group of people living together in one place, practicing one common ownership, such as a community of nuns. None of us really fit that definition, do we? When you think about it, when you form a family, you're building a very small community, your nuclear family. Be it a household with two parents and a child, or a mother and two children, or even extended family with a grandparent living in the household. You are living in a community with common interests, and everybody has certain responsibilities, spoken or unspoken, in that covenantal relationship of that family. I cook, you clean. The kids set as well as clear the table. Everyone gets fit. We all take part in the work that needs to be done for the family to function. In a traditional family, dad earns the money to pay the bills, mom took care of the house and the kids, and everybody had their roles assigned. These days, most families don't live near extended family. Grandparents, aunts, and uncles are typically a drive away, maybe a couple hours, but sometimes significantly longer. So where is the common purpose or group of individuals that come together to support one another? So then comes the concept of intentional community. And intentional community is a concept that came out of Denmark and is springing up all over the country with co-housing communities. Fairly modern concept that goes back to older times. An intentional community is a planned residential community designed from the start to have a high degree of social cohesion and teamwork. The members of an intentional community typically hold a common social, political, religious, or spiritual vision, often follow an alternative lifestyle. They typically share responsibilities and resources. Intentional communities can include collective households, co-housing, eco-villages, communes, survival retreats, kibbutz, ashrams, and housing cooperatives. New members are generally selected by the community's existing membership rather than by real estate agents, so you have to get voted in and agreed upon. The land is not owned collectively. If the land is not owned collectively by the community. So you buy in. We toured a co-housing community in Maryland in Blacksburg a few years ago. In Blacksburg, Virginia. And they had 33 acres with 30 houses. Some were retirees, some were single parents. The houses were all on 3 acres. And it was designed in such a way so that everybody was forced to interact with each other. There was a common house, and if I chose to cook dinner at the common house one night and feed the community, I could show up any other night when anyone else was cooking and eat for free. All the parking was on the perimeter with the houses in the interior and a pedestrian way that led to the common house, and you had to go out and walk to the common house to pick up your mail. So you couldn't be isolated or insulated. The other thing that they did that I thought was so interesting is every house had a front porch. All the playing area was in the center, and all of the kitchens faced out of the front door. We met with members of the community to talk about what it was like to live there. And one of the things that they said was most of them never lock their door. So if I came home and I needed eggs for a recipe, I could just walk over to Karen's, and if she wasn't home, I could just pull two eggs out and leave a note. Would any of you do that with your neighbors where you live? It's a very different philosophy. So think about that in terms of UUFBR. When you join a church or a spiritual house of any time, this fellowship, you become a part of a community. You have intentionally joined this covenantal community. Harris once explained to me, we were talking about something this past year, and she said, being in community with each other means that we have entered into a sacred agreement with one another, a covenant of sorts, a pledge that we will support each other through the good and the bad, and that we will work through the difficult times when they happen. So that's what it means to be a part of this community. And we've proven over and over again at UUFBR that we are a community. As we've worked through budget difficulties, disagreements over the CERCRA bequest, we don't always agree on the right course of action, but we try to remember that each and every person has the best interest of this fellowship at heart. We may disagree about what that best interest is, but I know that each and every person coming to the table is doing what they think is best. And so that'll take us over a lot of hurdles. Now, I, like Maria, went to my first UU church and immediately felt at home. It was in Pittsburgh, in Shadyside, first UU of Shadyside. And I remember the feeling after reading the seven principles and being there through the sermon, the sense of belonging. I had found people who believed what I believed. And I've been attending UU churches for over 20 years now. I attended the UU church in Shadyside, then the one in Columbus, Ohio. For a short time, I attended First UU in Austin, Texas. We attended the UU in North Palm Beach when we first got married. But to be honest, I was never a part of any of these communities. I was never a part of the community. I wasn't in a relationship with these churches. I was a consumer. I showed up on Sunday morning. I sat in a seat. I took in what they had to offer. I put money in the plate. I listened to the music. Sometimes I brought children of friends to the RE classes. And I considered myself a UU. I considered myself a member of these congregations. And I didn't understand that I was just a consumer. I would have described myself as being a part of that church. But now at UUFBR, I understand what it means to be a member of this community, and it's a slow process. When we first married and lived in North Palm Beach, we went to the UU there. There was actually an interim minister named Jose when we were there. Short, Puerto Rican, about as big around as he was tall. And he had this booming voice. He had a magical voice. And he did Genevieve's dedication. And he would at times pick her up and hold her while he preached, because he would walk. He walked the room while he preached. And she was in love with his voice. You could see her little eyes just lock on and follow his voice around the room. But we really never got to know the people there. We never actually joined or entered that community. When we moved south to Boynton Beach, we started coming to UUFBR. And it wasn't hard to leave the North Palm UU because we weren't attached. We had no attachment there. And we attended services here infrequently. We would show up sporadically whenever the Spirit moved us or time allowed. And we liked it, but we weren't a part of this community either. In 2007, that really changed. We went through a really rough year. My mom died of cancer March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. 2 weeks later, on April Fool's Day, Dave's mom died unexpectedly from injuries related to a fall that she'd had. We then went through the death of his grandmother, and Genevieve went to a lot of funeral masses for all of those relatives, the mother of a friend, and the next time we were getting her dressed for church, she looked at us, she said, well, who died? Because church was where you went when someone died. And we talked about it, and we realized we needed to make a commitment. We needed to come more frequently, because we didn't just want it to be the place you go where someone dies and you take something from the community. So we made a commitment and we started going every week. And I always say that church is a lot like the gym. It's really hard to get yourself there. But at the end of it, you're so happy you went. So happy you made the effort. Now for us, it's like muscle memory. This is just what we do on a Sunday morning. We get up, we go through our morning, and we drive to UUFBR. And we can't not come when Genevieve's home, because she is very attached to this fellowship. The one time that we didn't come this past year, she made us take her to Harris's house so she could come with Harris. Yeah. And there are certain moments that stand out in my memory with perfect clarity. I was the mom who took her child to the RE wing, said hello to the teachers, and at that time the teachers were members, said hello to them and walked away. I never really got to know them. And I am, a lot of you will find this shocking, very socially awkward. Some of you will go, yes, we know. But I struggle with small talk. I struggle with figuring out how to handle coffee hour. You know, if I have a role, if I'm playing a role, if I'm there as the membership coordinator, there as a greeter, I know exactly what to do. If I'm just trying to figure out who to talk to and there's a bunch of groups there, I just want to go and hide. That's kind of my way. So I have trouble connecting with people. And I have such clarity about when I actually became a part of this community. And it was the camping trip. I had agreed to go on the camping trip. Now, I do remember trying to back out and being like, do we have to do this? Dave was the one who wanted to sign us up. He had paid the money, not that it was a lot of money. And Dave was excited about it and the fact that they had platform tents. I got to be honest, I didn't know what the hell a platform tent was, why it was so exciting for him. It meant less work for him as the one who sets up and schleps everything. It was in February, right before the anniversary of my mom's death. And the day that we were heading out to Quiet Water Park, a business partner had betrayed us. Someone that we had given business to, we had let him have our name and open an office in Tampa that we had previously owned, said, oh, by the way, I'm going to open an office in Fort Lauderdale and try and take your business away. Literally 2 hours before we left for Quiet Waters. So we got there and I was really raw. I was remembering my mom's death. I was cursing Mike in my head. Different Mike, not Mike Bullard. And I remember I kept walking off on my own and crying, going for walks and crying and coming back. And I didn't really know the families there. I knew them enough to say hi and identify them. I couldn't give the correct names for the Conroy girls. They were just the Conroy girls. I couldn't tell Aaron and Allie apart at that point. They were the Butler Cordova girls. And then, so I went through the whole day, we had dinner, whatever, and then it was the time for the campfire. And I was sitting there and lovely, lovely little Fiona climbed up into my lap with her bright, shining eyes and her exuberance and her energy. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, there's a wonderful feeling of having a child in your lap. So Fiona's sitting there in my lap, and Genevieve's like, what the heck, where do I sit? The next thing I know, she ends up in Judy Kaiser's lap. And I'm looking around, and people are singing songs, and Joanne is sitting next to me, and I felt like I belonged. And that was the moment, to me, as I look back on it, I didn't know it at the time, but that was a moment where I became a part of this community. These were my people. And so I very clearly remember that that's the weekend that I drank the Kool-Aid. And it seems so long ago, but I, like Karen and Paul, was not really a joiner. It's like, yeah, that's nice. Didn't really join. So then all of a sudden, you know, you kind of get sucked in once you drink the Kool-Aid. So I taught RE, started volunteering to help with various things, and opened up my heart, let down my guard, and started forming connections with the people here. I asked for help when I needed it, and people offered. I helped other people when they needed it. And in case you don't know, this community is really special. If you talk to people who have moved away, Ken and John, Don and Linda, Joanne and Stan, they'll tell you how special this is because they haven't found that where they lived. They found other UU churches, but the community that holds you so close and supports you, They haven't found that. And I remember talking to Linda after they moved to Atlanta and asking her, so how is it? Are you finding your place? Are you making connections? And she said, Don had worked for Ford for 25 years. And that was his tribe. And he was fine because he knew Ford and he knew the culture. And after she had discovered UUFBR, she realized this was her tribe. And so she just had to find her tribe and she'd be fine. And the tribe is everyone who's here. And it may be, you know, we have some people, I won't name names. They're a bit curmudgeonly. You might know who you are or who they are. But it's hard to be a curmudgeon when you live alone. So maybe the reason they come here is so they can have somebody to complain to and something to complain about. They're a part of our community. I love the people who do the work, and I won't name any names, but they know who they are. They just show up and they do the gardening and they make the flea market happen and they fix the stuff in the building that breaks and they stop the toilet in the woman's room from leaking because the bolts are coming out. Whatever it is, they just show up and they do the work. Hopefully they all know who they are. We used to be a part of a community within our neighborhoods, but now we don't know our neighbors like we used to. Now, I know from going on watchdog.com that one of my neighbors just got committed of child porn, so that was, you know, don't really want to know him that well, to be honest, not interested in forming a relationship or making him a part of my community. But a lot of my neighbors I know well enough to say hi. I know if they're widowers. I know if they're snowbirds. But I don't know them. I don't know their hearts or their values the way I do the people in this room. So this, for me, the whole saying, it takes a village to raise a child, this is my village. UFBR is my village. If I have a PTA meeting, I call Nina or Michelle. Can Genevieve come over to your house? And they can call me. Harris is always offering to let me drop Genevieve off. I feel a little guilty about that because she's a single mom and does way too much. But she's always offering. Lee and Harriet have offered to take Genevieve so Dave and I can go see an adult movie. I don't mean that came out wrong. A grown-up movie. I always say the wrong thing. And it always takes me a little bit by surprise and lightens my heart how much this community just rises up to support each other. The people here accept me as I am, and I try to be my best self. They know my strengths and my weaknesses. I had to come in and apologize to Mary Cadwell this morning because even though I read her email and thought through the answers to the three questions, I never emailed her back this week. They give me moments of awe when they rise up, when I watch somebody helping someone else, when I watch Barb inviting Harriet to stay at her house after she has a medical procedure, or everybody showing up at Ellen and Charlie's to move them. I'm always struck by how much we show up for each other, just to be present in each other's lives. That's such a gift. And sometimes the lessons you get here are lessons in spiritual growth as somebody bugs the bejeebers out of you, you know? Or somebody disappoints you, it's going to happen. I'm going to disappoint you. We're all going to have moments of success and of failure. But the people here truly know and accept me, warts and all. And I really honor and value that love and acceptance because it's a rare thing to find a circle like this, to find your tribe. The closest relationships that my family has with other families are people that we've met through this fellowship for the most part. And that's because we know the hearts of the people who are here. We've received lessons in strength and grace and commitment and love from the people of this community. And even though Harris had put in her letter to the kids the quote, "We don't have to think alike to love alike." Even though we may believe and call God by a different name, we may be an atheist. The person next to you could be a Buddhist, you could be an atheist, they could identify as Jewish or Christian. That doesn't matter because we all come here to try and rise up to be our best selves. We have lots of differences. But in our hearts, in the recesses of our minds, we share the same values. We want the same things, and we try our best to live those seven principles. We may not always succeed. We may have moments where we feel like, oh, I really missed the mark on that. Sometimes we may fall down, but we pick ourselves up and we try to do better next time. We try to be our best selves, to bring that to the other people here who love us and support us so much. So that's why this community is so special to me. Now I'm going to bridge into SUSE, which for those of you who don't know, is the Southeastern Unitarian Universalist Summer Institute. And it bills itself as an intentional community of approximately 1,200 people who gather the third week of July near Roanoke, Virginia, to explore interconnectedness, learn new ways of seeing our world and each other, delight in the joys of meeting old friends and making new ones, share outdoor adventures, dance, sing, and their tagline this year is, "Together we'll create a week of conversation, reflection, activity, nourishment, fun, and family. Let it be a dance," is this year's theme. Now, how we ended up at SUSE was Linda Conroy. She sucked us into it. She took her family and discovered how magical that week was for her family and how different it was than the everyday, ordinary life. And she started talking to about us, and we approached SUSE much like we approached coming to this fellowship. We signed up for classes, registered, talked to Linda on the phone a number of times about what to expect. Should we bring granola bars? How bad was the food? You know, it's a campus cafeteria. We were worried. And we went for the first time 4 years ago. This summer will be our fourth SUSE. We went, once again, as consumers. We registered to be the Conroy suite mates in the dorm, and we put down that we wanted to be in the co-op dorm, which meant that one night out of the seven, we would sit at home in the hallway, and if any child woke up, we would get the parents for them. And the other six nights, we could go out. We could go out and listen to music, go to the dances, go to the show that's called TWAB, Teens Way Off Broadway. Allie will be in it this year. So will Ari. Yeah. And we were really excited about that. Well, we got there, and even though we had been told we were in the co-op dorm, our registration said co-op dorm, we were not in the co-op dorm. We were just in a regular dorm room. We had the Conroys as suite mates, and we kept expecting somebody to fix this mistake. There'd be like a hotel manager who's like, oh, this is not where you're supposed to be. Let us move you. It didn't happen. There was no manager, no key to a new room, no plan to make everything right. And I remember very clearly my frustration with the man with shoulder-length curly hair and the tie-dye t-shirt who kept going, "It'll all work out, don't worry." I literally wanted to scream or punch him in the throat. Not sure which one would have happened. Don't worry, I often have that feeling. I never do it. That night, as I sat in the dorm room looking at the institutional beige walls in this small room while Genevieve slept and cried, Dave and I actually talked about packing up the car and just driving home. Because what's the point of being here? We could be at home with her in a separate room and walk around the house and do things and all of that. But if we're there, we're trapped. We're trapped in that room with her. She is like an anchor weighing us down sometimes. I know, you're all thinking it. It seemed like some form of punishment or torture. But we chose to stay anyway. And then the magic happened. Linda thought it through and said, you know what, as long as one of the older kids are home, as long as Kate's home or Maddie's home, they can handle it if Genevieve wakes up. Don't worry about that. Karen Topel said, you know what, I can come to your room one night and sit and read a book while Genevieve sleeps so you guys can go out. Other parents whose kids Genevieve had met in the kids program were like, she can come have a sleepover at our room in the co-op dorm, and that way you guys can go out. As we talked about it, we realized that we were a part of a community, and it was all going to work out because everyone wanted to support you and make your experience a fabulous one. It wasn't just strangers who was like, oh, that's too bad, moving on. You know, it was a very different experience for us. And as the week passed, we listened to amazing music. We went to, believe it or not, at SUSE, there's a morning theme talk and an evening worship, and I go to both. And it's hard to explain to people that you go away for a week and do two church things a day, but you're not like the religious right. People are like, oh, you go to church a lot. But we're not like a churchy church. We're different. We realized there was no need to pack granola bars or smuggle soda in. I came to like the man with the curly shoulder-length hair and the tie-dye shirt. He wore that shirt all week, by the way. No longer wanted to punch him when I saw him. And we realized that we were a part of this Susie village. And every year when we go back, we see old friends, we make new ones, we connect with people, they support us, and we support them right back. And now, after that first year, we began sucking other people down the rabbit hole. So now our group includes the Butler Cordovas, the Leones, the Cruz Moores, the Kaisers. For the first time ever, Harris and Maggie will join us. Doug usually doesn't even acknowledge us. He just walks past our group in the dining hall. He's been going for like 20 plus years. He has his own friends. This year, he's staying with the UUFBR group. He has a granddaughter with him, so he figured she should meet appropriate people, I guess. I don't know. And although we're all there together, and we do definitely spend time together, everybody has their own experiences. So Dave and I, we have never, other than the one trip of the co-housing community, we never leave the campus. We get there, we move all our crap into the dorm room, he parks the car and hikes back. I don't ever do that stuff. He's very good about that stuff. And we are on campus for the entire time. So this year we signed up for our first nature trip to break out of the box. Everybody has their own ideas and they have their own experiences. Greg and Jackie do a lot of nature trips and they find naps in the afternoon very important. Alexis and Morgan go to bed early, so they're not usually up with the rest of us. Dave and I nearly go to every concert. Doug attends all the dances. He's a dance maniac. And there's so much going on that you have these completely different experiences. I remember I would see Judy Kaiser in passing. She did not end up with the UFBR group because she signed up late last year. And so we'd see her in the cafeteria, and she had this whole, like, circle. I'm sure it was like a harem because people love Judy when they meet her. Dave hangs out the first night at the sing-along until 3 in the morning, typically. And I think Greg and Rich went to barbecue, see, which starts at 2 a.m. To eat barbecue in the middle of the night with a bunch of men, I don't know. Wasn't my thing. And I've done a lot of craft workshops. I went to a Dancing with the Goddess workshop and snuck out at break. There was another guy in the elevator sneaking out, too. It's very funny. I went to a workshop on This I Believe and wrote my own statement, like the PBS series This I Believe. Dave sings with the Susie Boys, and now he leads the Gospel Glee Club. And he's on stage with all of the artists at some point or another, it seems like. Genevieve does the kids program, and she's actually sung on stage with Dave. She sang Rockin' Robin with Dave. She sang with Amy Carroll Webb and Pat Wichter up on stage and loves that. Dave's going to tell you a little bit more about what the Susie lineup is like. But it truly is, whatever you choose to do, there's so much going on. You can do anything you want to do. Your
turn. Was that for her or for me? Yeah, I will be a little shorter and I will use correct terminologies like grown-up movies. Anyway. So I'm supposed to describe to you Susie, so I will turn to the all-knowing Wikipedia, who describes Susie as the Southeastern Unitarian Universalist Summer Institute. Susie is an intergenerational community of approximately 1,000 people who gather each July. I describe it as the hippie family summer camp. People attending Susie predominantly abide by the teachings of Unitarian Universalism, but many participants belong to other denominations or faiths. Susians range in age from newborn to elderly. They come from all different states and sometimes even other countries. They range from first-timers, affectionately known as newbies, to the lady who has been coming to Susie for more than 50 years. They always do this thing at the begin gathering where they say, okay, who's been here for 1 year? So everybody stands up. No kidding. Has anybody been here for 5 years? And then people sit down. And has anybody been here for 10 years? And more people sit down. And when you get to 50, you're like, holy crap. Really? This lady's been coming for over 50 years. Anyway, it's really cool. So Susie says that their mission is to provide a one-week experience evoking the best within us in concert with Unitarian Universalism universalist principles, Susie offers the opportunity to share an intergenerational environment of love, personal freedom, ethics, and joy in an intentional, non-judgmental community. I believe the mission of Susie is to have so much fun that at the end of the week, you slide into bed and go, The teenagers will look like walking zombies after about day four. You can always tell who is a teenager because they show up for meals with the rest of us, but they are totally exhausted. They look worn out, sleep deprived, and all they have is a huge smile spread across their faces. Many people attend Susie for its spiritual impact. There are daily services, like Lynn said, including minister-led morning theme talks as well as evening worship services. It is hard to believe, I agree with Lynn, that it's that you're going to worship service every day, twice a day, and that'd be a good way to spend your vacation, but it really is. The ministers all decide on their own topics. They run their services as they see fit. It's really wonderful to be a part of all those services and getting to listen and learn from such a broad array of UU ministers from all over the country. I have some personal favorites, including Reverend David Carl Olson, who's the minister from the UU congregation of Baltimore. He's actually leading the morning worship service on Monday morning, so I'm kind of happy about that because I get to start my vacation by getting to hear him first and going to his service. Now, they have something called workshops. Workshops, there are a multitude of workshops, and they're taught entirely by volunteers. They're taught by people like me and Lynn and Alexis and Judy who go to Susie. That's who teach the workshops. They cover a range of topics, including art, history, science, technology, politics, religion, culture, and, of course, music. The workshop I lead is a music group entitled the Susie Gospel Glee Club. It's a performance group who we had a wonderful time singing, performing last week all over the place, or last year. We counted at one point and we sang like, I don't know, 17 times or something like that. It was great. We had the wonderful pleasure of singing backup for some of the national performing artists who were there. We sang backup for Kaya Hartwood, Steve Greenberg, Wendy Repass, Mindy Simmons, and of course Amy Carroll Webb, which was a lot of fun. Last year, Lynn taught a crafting workshop called Altered Art. She had a great week. She taught and worked with her class to upcycle cigar boxes, among other things. She decided to take a hiatus this year from teaching and enjoy her Susie time by taking photography workshops. Now, there's also a lot of nature stuff. They have a whole nature staff, of which our own Greg Butler is a part of the nature staff this year. And people do travel to Susie, and all they do is nature trips. They experience a local environment. It's really cool. These trips may focus on local trails, caves, rivers, terrain. They also, you know, they may focus on specific wildflowers or trees, animals, insects, whatever. Susie nature trips practice a leave no trace outdoor ethics. Our very own Greg Butler, as I said, is a member of the nature staff this year, and he'll be leading trips such as the early morning and evening canoeing and tubing with the teenagers. I myself am signed up for the River Cleanup Service Project, which is a canoeing trip on whatever river it's on. I don't remember if it's the New River, but nonetheless, and we, you know, it's a really cool. I hear it's, from what I understand, I've never done it before, but it's supposed to be the most fun of all the nature trips. I'm sure Greg's are going to be more fun this year. But I understand it's the most fun of all the trips, and of course, it's the added benefit of cleaning up the environment, which is, you know, right up the alley for a bunch of tree huggers. There's also nightlife, lots of nightlife. There's the evening program includes nightly performances and events. Some of the typical offerings include cabarets, talent shows, dances. They have multiple dance venues. They have ones that are alcohol-free and alcoholic. The alcoholic ones are age defined, of course. There's a coffee house, lounge, movie nights, barbecue-y, of course, which Linda told you starts at 2 o'clock in the morning. Susie frequently attracts professional-level entertainers for nightly performances, such as Tret Fury, Brother Son, Wishing Chair, Meg Barnhouse, Amy Carroll Webb, and a lot of others. Now, all that being said, there you go. That's Susie in a nutshell. But all that being said, I would like to talk about what Susie really means. It is an intentional community. It is a place where 1,000 people, more or less, come together for a week of fun and friendship and love and to be a part of a community. They give up their lives for a week to be a part of a family. They travel from their homes to be a brother or sister or mother or friend to the other people who came to do the same thing. They come to be a part of this intentional community. Now, when we first showed up in Radford, Virginia, we had great expectations about the vacation we would have. As Lynn told you a little bit ago, that kind of changed for the worse when we first got there. We got to registration. Things were not what we expected. We went from this euphoric high to this really low, sad low, you know, this unbridled anticipation to this, aw, crap. We actually did think about leaving and just driving home. Then the unthinkable happened. The members of this intentional community opened their hearts and invited us in. What we expected was nothing close to what we got, and we were so much the better for it. The arms and hearts of these people, the majority of whom we had never even met before, opened up and wrapped us up. Just about every person we met kept telling us it would be all right, it would work out, which, as Lynn said at the beginning, really ticked us off. I didn't feel like punching anybody like Lynn did, but nonetheless. And it really did work out. It did. For when you become a part of an intentional community, you truly are a member of a larger family. And family looks out for family. And these are the family members you always wished you had. You know, not the ones you got stuck with at birth. In our house, we have a saying that Thanksgiving is for family and Christmas is for relatives. Well, these are the people that you wish you had at your house at Thanksgiving, because really, Susie, it really is a 1,000-person holiday. That's what it is for a week. It's really cool. You become a member of this 1,000-person family that lasts much longer than the 7 days we spend together on this college campus in Virginia, and it runs much deeper than just an acquaintance friendship. There is a lady and her 2 boys from Michigan who we ran into a couple of years ago, who we all befriended, who has now become an integral part of our vacation. I just found out last night that Sarah and the boys are not coming this year. Lynn just told me. I was very sad. See? Very sad. Yeah. And I know I feel like we're going to be missing a family member because Sarah and her boys are awesome. Adam and what's the other one? Aaron. Adam and Aaron. Sorry about that. And then last year, she brought a friend of hers, Brianna, and her son down from Michigan, and now she's become a member of the family, too. And I hope she's coming. I don't know. Gosh, I haven't even thought about that. And then last year, Judy Kaiser joined the UUFBR outpost at Susie, and she promptly taught us how to properly experience Susie. She basically made us all look like amateurs. Every year upon arriving at Susie, the hugs begin to flow. Hugs are always free at Susie. Meeting new family members and reigniting friendships with the ones you haven't seen for 51 weeks are how you spend the first day or two. Meals in the college cafeteria are really more of a gigantic family holiday dinner where people find themselves in conversations with those they decide to sit with or those who decide to sit with them. A bonus for those of us traveling from here is that we get to see and hug the Conroy family. Now, Don won't be there this year, but Linda and the kids will, and, well, let's be serious, Linda's really the draw. Come on, I mean, we like Don, but really, Linda, you know. So last year, our UUFBR enclave took up a whole wing of the floor we had in Norwood Dorm, where we were also delighted to learn that we had private bathrooms. And we didn't have to share them, even with suitemates, let alone other people on the floor. So we set up our beach chairs and tables in the hallway, and we spent the quiet times of our days and evenings hanging out, talking, playing games, singing, or just being together and reading whatever books that we were all involved in. We walk to meals or classes together. We show up at lunch to find one of us talking to some new person they met during their morning workshops or a friend they haven't seen since last year. And, you know, it all flows smoothly, and it seems to work no matter how messy it appears. And it does appear messy at times, trust me. Feeding 1,000 people at one time is never an easy task. And, you know, my good friend Alexis may feel a little bit differently about mealtime because It gets a little loud and overbearing sometimes in the cafeteria, but it really is a great feeling of friendship. And actually, speaking of Alexis and the other people here who have attended Susie, if anybody would like to step up and pass on their thoughts on Susie, we would love to have you come up. Alexis is saying no, we've run too long, and shut up. So apparently none of them want to come forward and say anything right now, so I'm going to pass the dais back over to Lynn.